Welcome back to Lungcast, the monthly respiratory health podcast series from the American Lung Association and medical news site HCP Live. I'm your host, Dr. Albert Rizzo, Chief Medical Officer of the American Lung Association. Before we introduce our guest today, just a reminder that Lungcast is available on all your favorite streaming platforms. You can subscribe to @Lungcast on YouTube to get new and archived episodes, as well as interview segments and episode highlights as they come out. A link to the show page, as well as the ALA and HCP Live homepages for Lungcast, can be found in your episode description. And for those of you who prefer a podcast, you can subscribe to Lungcast on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and your favorite listening platforms. You can also register for more respiratory news and insights at both lung.org and hcplive.com. Now let's go on to today's topic. By the late 20th century, applications of digital technology began to challenge the continued use of analog technology in medical imaging. The fields of radiography, fluoroscopy, and mammography made the transition by offering image acquisition and efficient storage and transmission methods known as PACS. These PACS, which stand for Picture Archiving and Communication Systems, streamlined healthcare operations while bringing benefits through reduced costs associated with film-based processes. Today, medical imaging technology continues to evolve. Applications of artificial intelligence have expanded beyond traditional radiology, aiding in pathology, dermatology, and even genomics. Imaging techniques include 3D printing, molecular imaging, and functional MRI, while pushing the boundaries of diagnostics and treatment planning. Today, we're going to focus on artificial intelligence and its role in chest imaging. And for that, my guest today is Dr. Rachel Eddy. Dr. Eddy holds a joint appointment as an assistant professor in the Department of Pediatrics, University of British Columbia, and the British Columbia's Children's Hospital in Radiology. She's an investigator with University of British Columbia Center for Heart and Lung Innovation and British Columbia's Children's Hospital Research Institute. She completed her electrical and biomedical engineering undergraduate degree at McMaster University and a PhD in medical biophysics at Western University. Dr. Eddy's research has focused on developing and applying a novel pulmonary imaging and data science tools to provide a deep understanding of chronic lung disease and novel inhalation lung exposures, as well as ways to use imaging to guide lung disease interventions. You should agree that she sounds like an excellent guest for today's topic. So thank you for joining me today, Dr. Eddy.
Yes, thank you very much for having me here.
So artificial intelligence is an umbrella term that incorporates various algorithms, including machine learning, deep learning, and natural language processing. Could you please give our listeners a brief tutorial on these different terms and comment on the more recent use of the term generative when it comes to AI and imaging?
Yeah, so such a big topic. You know, I think we could spend the whole podcast talking about this, but I'll try to do this briefly. I've seen these really great visual diagrams that, you know, we can think of AI as a large sort of all-encompassing circle. And AI is generally described as the ability of a machine to learn automatically and display intelligent human-like behavior. AI really relies on big data sets, though, to develop its function in a consistent fashion and to generate reliable results. So diving deeper then from AI as that large, all-encompassing circle, machine learning would then be a smaller or medium-sized circle sort of inside of AI, where a machine automatically learns patterns that it sees in the data and uses those patterns to make different decisions about new data. So here the machine learns the mapping from an input to an output, using math and statistics such that it's an explainable mapping from start to finish. And we can trace back and understand how the machine mapped that start to that finish. Back to our circles then, deep learning would then be a smaller circle, you know, inside of machine learning that uses more complex algorithms intended to mimic the human brain. And these are typically called deep neural networks that map the input to the output. These networks are called neural because they're meant to mimic how neurons in the human brain signal each other. Deep learning combines math and stats as well, but with these complex neural networks to map the start to the finish. Compared to machine learning, deep learning especially requires really large data sets to learn accurate mappings of that start to finish. However, we don't always know what that mapping is and how the network generated that mapping. This is why deep learning is often called sort of a black box, where we can't actually see inside that box and how the machine learned the mapping. There's a common limitation of deep learning compared to machine learning. There is some novel work going into understanding how we can see in that black box, but we can perhaps save that topic for another day. Despite these limitations, though, deep learning plays, you know, a large role in most of our daily lives, I think, now, and has been applied quite extensively in lung as well as other kinds of imaging. Either of machine learning or deep learning is not necessarily better than the other, but it really depends on the application and the data available to train the machine or the model. Diving deeper then into, let's talk about some how we can use these models with medical imaging. And it's really a great example of where AI can play a really large and beneficial role. Most, if not all, data sets now are in a digital form, as you said in the introduction. These are often very large three-dimensional data sets, even for a single image from a single patient. So you can imagine how quickly those data sets grow when you have many, many patients. Both kinds of deep learning and machine learning have been applied to things like disease detection, classification, such as if you're identifying a nodule, is that nodule cancerous or not, and to make different kinds of measurements or quantifications on an image, and even to actually predict patient outcomes. So some really classic examples in the context of lung imaging have been automated diagnoses of lung diseases like COPD or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or a COVID infection from a chest X-ray or from a CT scan. Some other really good examples would be automatically detecting lung nodules and then predicting the prognosis of that lung nodule within a person. Now, to touch on your last concept about generative AI now, it might perhaps be, I think, the latest development and currently one of the most popular applications of these topics. The generative AI would be, you know, now our smallest circle inside of deep learning. And it's like the name implies, used to create new content, whether that be a text or an image or music or audio. I think we've seen lots of examples of this online now. But in the context of medical imaging of the chest, it's been applied in the same context as mentioned before for identifying different things on a lung image and doing this automatically, but goes one step further and can be used to generate a radiology-like text report from an image, or actually even to generate a 3D CT image from a single 2D chest X-ray.
We certainly covered a big topic very efficiently, I believe. So let's go a little bit more deeply into some of the work you've specifically done. I believe much of your work in AI has been done to assess airway and mucus changes in the setting of asthma. So if we start with that, let us know what your work has taught us about this and how it translates into information that can be used in the patient with COPD or asthma, for example.
So following up from the overview of AI that we just talked about, let me first start by saying that my work so far has used AI algorithms to derive measurements from CTs of the lungs, especially of the airways. And we've used those to tell us something about asthma and patients with asthma. So asthma has long been understood as a variable lung disease with symptoms that sort of come and go over time. And those symptoms that can be reversed with using inhaled therapies like a bronchodilator. So while symptoms may be variable, my work and others have shown that the airway abnormalities in the lungs of patients with asthma are very focal, meaning that they can be localized to a certain region of the lungs within an individual patient. So this pattern has been likened to sort of a fingerprint or a lung print that is unique to that person. We took this then and completed a small longitudinal study and showed that these focal airway abnormalities stay in the same regions over at least 6.5 years in these patients. And when they do worsen, they do so in a they do so specifically from and within those areas that were abnormal at their first baseline visit. And so this was really diving into the regional pattern, if you will, and starting to debunk a little bit that understanding of the variable nature on a spatial level, I guess you could say. So we then showed that we could use these airway related measurements and predict future loss of the reversibility with a bronchodilator. So that classic component. And so this is where the connection to COPD comes in then. COPD is often defined as a fixed airflow obstruction that does not reverse with bronchodilators. And so the CT measurements of the airways are highly abnormal in patients with asthma, in some cases similar to that of COPD, which is perhaps thought to be a more progressive lung disease. And we could use these imaging measurements of the airways to predict which patients with asthma would progress to a point that in a way their lung disease might be closer to that of COPD than it was at baseline. Going one step further than identifying these sort of observational features, if you will, about patients with asthma, I've collaborated on other work showing that these airway measurements and additional measurements of mucus plugging within the airways respond to different asthma treatments. And this really shows how quantitative imaging can be powerful new tools understand treatment response and powerful new measurements that we can make in the context of clinical trials now for these novel therapies. Similar things can be said about COPD too. There's been a lot of great work from some others in the field lately showing how patients with COPD who have more mucus plugs have a greater risk of mortality. In this way, mucus plugs may be an important new treatment target towards improving outcomes for patients with COPD too.
Very interesting. That certainly could be a modifying agent with the course of the patient's disease. Great. Now, outside of the area of airways disease, such as asthma and COPD, as you just mentioned, I know more recently you're working on the imaging biomarkers in interstitial lung disease. Can you please tell us how AI is transforming the diagnostic process in this population of patients?
This is a really exciting concept. So in contrast to asthma and COPD, CT is actually used to make the ILD diagnosis. And so because of this, AI may have the potential to make an even greater impact. Right now, though, chest CTs are conventionally reviewed by expert radiologists, and they're reviewing for things like lung fibrosis. There's specific patterns they'll be looking for on CT that are called reticulation, traction bronchiectasis, and honeycombing patterns on these chest CTs. And they'll often assign a sort of visual percent burden of the lungs that is impacted by fibrosis. And this is a relatively crude way of doing it, right? If any person was visually looking at a CT image, you might at best be able to separate, 5, 10, 15%, but you can't get down to that very precise level. So let's say 25% fibrotic lung disease, and that would be 25% of the entire lung volume. But going one step further, because these CTs are such an integral component of the clinical care for ILD patients, there's been numerous machine learning as well as deep learning algorithms that have been developed to automatically and very precisely measure the total percent burden of fibrosis on CT, as well as quantify those individual patterns of reticulation, honeycombing, et cetera. Many of these measurements from these algorithms have been shown to be related to future risk of mortality. So the greater percent fibrosis on CT a patient have might portend a worse future risk or a sooner risk of mortality. Some are even being used to evaluate treatment response in some novel trials for novel therapies for ILD, and even being used as an inclusion criteria for these trials to actually enrich the study population. And in that way, you can almost have a smaller trial if you sort of are able to enrich for the factors that you think would be most responsive to your therapy with such a precise measurement that comes from quantitative CT. You can have a smaller trial, perhaps a shorter trial time span as well. This could be, let's say, an automated measurement of 10% fibrosis on CT would be an inclusion criteria for that trial. Beyond the actual diagnosis of ILD, automated algorithms are also being applied to detect early interstitial lung abnormalities before there really is overt CT changes that would be classified as ILD or fibrotic. And using the quantitative measurements from those automated algorithms to evaluate the risk of these abnormalities in these patients. So these are often being detected in these large cohort studies. There's a lot of really great examples from the COPD gene cohort study, from the Spiromics cohort study, from the MESA cohort study even, which was more of a community-dwelling, healthy adult study, and looking at how you can measure those automatically on a CT scan and predict a patient's further development of risk of some kind of chronic lung disease before it's officially diagnosed. So I think it's really exciting times all around in this space.
So I wanted to switch gears a little bit and move away from the diseases we've just discussed. I believe, as you know, the American Lung Association is currently in a five-year phase, the first five-year phase of a generational long-term cohort study of millennials ages 25 to 35 called the Lung Health Cohort Study, with the hopes of identifying when an individual moves from what is considered peak lung health in their maybe 20s, early 30s, and then starts to have a decline, whether from the normal aging process or the initiation of a disease. Now, a large database of information on these patients from multiple questionnaires to query everything from their birth characteristics, family history, where they lived, including data to assess the air quality exposures at different locations, their habits of smoking, vaping, etc., and also many biomarkers, both blood and imaging, and nasal transcriptomes, as well as pulmonary function, is all being measured. Now, the goal is to identify a marker for disease initiation and use this to develop potentially a target for intervention, as you mentioned earlier, to prevent disease progression. What do you see as a role for AI in assessing the CT scans that are being done on these presumably normal individuals?
Yes, I am so excited about this study, and I've seen a lot about it online, so I'm excited to be able to talk to you about it as well. First, I think that AI algorithms can be used to automatically and precisely measure things we know that are abnormal in lung disease. And this would be things like airway wall thickening, mucus plugging, like we've already talked about, as well as parenchymal integrity, like emphysema, or the pulmonary vascular volumes even. And, you know, we can start to implement those at an earlier time point and perhaps identify more subtle changes before disease is diagnosed. Beyond that, AI can then be used, I think, to learn patterns between these imaging biomarkers and other blood or clinical biomarkers or environmental factors to learn to automatically identify which combination of factors or combinations of factors may predispose an individual to development of lung disease later in life. But where I really think it can add additional value to could be to identify features in these CT images that are not otherwise known by us already, or they're not are not necessarily obviously identifiable to the human eye. This is a good point, I think, perhaps, to introduce supervised versus unsupervised learning in the context of AI, which could, again, be applied to either machine or deep learning. I've mostly talked about supervised learning so far, where in this way we train the machine to measure what we want it to measure or what we want it to find. So for example, if we're trying to measure an airway wall thickness, we would train a model using a large, diverse data set of images with airway wall thickness measurements. We would provide it those measurements, and it would learn how to make those measurements. On the flip side, unsupervised learning would be providing the model with CT images and associated labels for that CT image or that patient, like COPD or no COPD, for example, and letting the machine identify what in the image would be predictive of COPD versus no COPD. There's a good example from some of my colleagues at UBC that did this with a lung cancer screening cohort. And the network actually identified a region around the trachea as the most predictive region for a patient to have COPD versus not have COPD, which I think was a bit surprising to the study team at the time. So in this millennial study, then, this could be a good opportunity to use AI to identify novel features that are predictive of future disease that we may not yet know, or we may not easily see on our own. Especially in combination with all of the other information you mentioned.
Aside from the overall cohort that I just mentioned of these 4,000 individuals, there's currently two specific ancillary studies in the cohort. One relates to what's called deep lung phenotyping and the assessment of dysynapsis using the CT scan, and the other one using hyperpolarized xenon MRI to detect microstructural abnormalities in lung function. Now, for our listeners, could you kind of break these down a little bit? Maybe first speak to the concept of dysynapsis using the CT scan at this point.
Yeah, sounds great. So this would be a measurement of the mismatch of the airways or the size of the airways to the overall lung volume in a person. It was first defined, I believe, around 1974, and it was defined using spirometry. And it was... at the time defined as an abnormal forced expiratory volume in 1 second to forced vital capacity, but with a normal forced expiratory volume. In a way, though, this is an indirect measurement since spirometry measures only reflect airflow made at the mouth. And neither of those metrics directly reflect the airway size or the lung size. But using CT, like we've already talked about, we have three-dimensional high-resolution images of the lungs, where we can now directly measure the airway size and the lung size to define a more direct measurement of this concept. This might seem kind of obvious, but was only relatively recently defined and measured in 2020 using CT by Ben Smith and colleagues from McGill University in Montreal. And they did this using three large American and Canadian population-based studies of older adults. So that's the important distinction from this your current study. Some of those cohort studies, sorry, actually were cohort studies specifically with COPD. This work showed that the lower airway to lung ratio or smaller airways relative to lung volumes was significantly associated with the risk of COPD in older adults. And this risk was actually to a greater extent than cigarette smoking. As you know, smoking has long been thought of as the single greatest risk factor for developing COPD. But this landmark work showed now that a person's inherent lung structure that they're born with, independent of cigarette smoking, could actually predispose them for the development of COPD. So I think what really makes this this study unique, though, is that measuring this factor at an earlier time point in life, possibly for the first time, to further define this sort of inherent lung structure as a risk factor for COPD and other lung diseases.
So aside from the significant data that you've already talked about, the CT scan, I wanted you now to tell us more about this work that's being done with the xenon-enhanced MRIs, and tell us how this information works with the data from the CT scan, and why this other ancillary study in the cohort study may be using this technique to look at microstructural abnormalities in lung function.
And I think this is a great segue. The first thing I'll say on this topic is that CT and xenon MRI provide complementary information about the lungs and together provide actually really powerful information about the lungs. CT primarily provides fantastic information and measurements of lung structure. We've talked a lot about this already, like the airway wall thickening, but xenon MRI alternatively provides direct information about lung function, and it can do this in 3D. And the Really common measurements we get from this are static ventilation, we'll call it, or the distribution of the inhaled gas throughout the lungs, as well as measuring gas exchange in a regional 3D fashion. The way that this is actually performed, the patients will inhale a bolus of xenon gas while laying inside the MRI scanner. And the images are very quickly taken in a short breath hold scan, so within about 15 seconds typically. It's important to note that xenon is a non-radioactive gas, and so it's safe for patients to inhale and to be used effectively as a contrast agent here. But specifically to this study, xenon can also be used to measure the lung microstructure by deeply investigating how the xenon gas, as a surrogate for the air that we breathe, freely moves within the air spaces or the alveoli of the lung. Air, or xenon in this case, is relatively restricted in healthy air spaces because the millions and millions of air spaces in healthy lungs are very small. And so the space for xenon to freely move around inside those air spaces is by nature also very small. In contrast, in emphysema, the airways are enlarged due to tissue destruction. And in this case, the xenon would be able to move around much more freely. And so using xenon MRI, we're actually measuring this free movement of xenon and you doing this to determine a relative airspace size at this small microstructural scale. As emphysema, though, is readily visualized and measured on CT, these MRI microstructure measurements and CT emphysema measurements are highly related. One study in particular has shown that these MRI microstructure measurements were significantly elevated in older adults who smoked cigarettes and were at risk of developing COPD, but had normal lung function on pulmonary function tests, as well as no evidence of emphysema on CT. So here, xenon MRI may actually be more sensitive to early airspace enlargement and small airway destruction before it is detectable by conventional tools. And so the importance of identifying this earlier is that you can intervene sooner as well. You can hopefully educate patients about smoking cessation if it is in the context of smoking, or provide different kinds of interventions to stop that airspace destruction at an earlier stage. And now this work is really important, though, because pioneering histology and micro CT work by Jim Hogg and colleagues from my own institution at UBC have shown that at least COPD starts in the smallest airways before disease is overtly detectable by spirometry or CT. And they've done this, like I said, using histology and micro CT. The catch, though, is that histology and micro CT can't easily be used in the lungs of young, healthy people. So using xenon MRI then provides a non-invasive measure of these smallest airways. And it may be more sensitive to those earliest changes in lung microstructure at the earliest stages of lung disease. So I know that the study is being led by a colleague of mine in the xenon MRI field, Peter Igbalski at the University of Kansas. And so I'm really excited to see the results generated by his team.
The field of AI and imaging, as we can tell just by your discussion, is evolving rapidly. Can you comment on what you see happening from maybe a technical perspective, and importantly, who would comment on when you see the clinical utility is evolving over the next several years?
Yeah, this could be such a broad topic as well. So, you know, I think I'll keep my response here in the context of medical imaging and lung health and disease, of course. From a very purely technical standpoint, I think what I'm most excited about is the advance of computing technology to be able to handle 3D data sets with other multidimensional data sets. This is more recently starting to be realized, but a lot of AI work in the medical imaging space has been forced to use 2D image slices rather than the entire 3D image stack, or to get really creative about using smaller 3D patches. And so you would break up that 3D image into multiple smaller 3D regions. As we know, the lungs are a very large organ, and in disease are highly regionally heterogeneous. And so I think it'll be really important going forward that all of these AI algorithms are able to incorporate that 3D information. And computing technology is really on the cusp of that, I think, right now. And so I'm excited to be able to use that myself, but to also see how the field leverages that. To flip to the clinical standpoint then, AI, I think, will have immense opportunities to support physicians in patient care. For example, supporting review of reporting imaging or pulmonary function tests, supporting identification of patient phenotypes, or supporting prognostication for a particular patient based on their pattern. The important word here, though, is support. We'll really need to find the right balance between the expert physicians and those automated AI algorithms. I think this is a really common theme, you know, in the news lately, in the scientific literature, and was actually the theme of this year's European Respiratory Society Congress, which just happened at the beginning of September. So really highlighting the importance of this topic and being able to strike the right balance between using these automated things and, you know, working with our physicians that we know and trust. In most cases, though, we still need AI algorithms that have been developed with very large, very diverse international training data, such that the results are generalizable to whatever that algorithm may be applied to. So all in all, there's still a lot to be done, but nevertheless, I think it's really exciting times to determine how we can work with automated AI algorithms, and importantly, in ways that improve patient care.
Thank you for bringing in the human component there at the end, which we all want to see continued. So really, thank you for your time today and the willingness to share your particular expertise with our listeners. To our listeners, if you want to hear more regarding all things respiratory related, we have accumulated a great archive of discussions on our show feeds. So be sure again to subscribe and rate Lungcast on your preferred listening or watching platform. Visit lung.org and hcplive.com for more news and resources. Until next time, I'm Dr. Albert Rizzo, reminding you that if you can't breathe, nothing else matters.